The sand hill was called Loch Ness. It rose out of the Virginia coastal flats like the hump on that mythical sea dragon. Every conditioning hike at the Marine Corps Amphibious Reconnaissance School, known as ARS, ended with a sprint up Loch Ness. The instructors watched us closely, and if you stumbled or your rifle touched the sand like a crutch, they would push you down the hill and tell you to start again. Temperatures hovered in the 90s that summer. More than once, I vomited in the sand. Most of us did. Years later, a friend of mine who graduated the course kept a glass Coke bottle filled with Loch Ness sand on the mantle above his fireplace. He said he kept it there as a reminder for when things in his own life got difficult. Written in black Sharpie on the bottle was the word, perspective. Jack and I met at ARS not even a year after 9/11. The war was new then. No one understood how long it would last or where it would take us. We even worried we might miss it. I was a year from finishing college and had talked my way into attending the course, where we lived in a squat barracks atop the hill. Jack was about to take command of an elite force reconnaissance platoon. Every week or so, the instructors would give us a night or even a whole day off. We would drive into town in Jack's car, a beat-up, sand-brown Jeep Cherokee his parents had given him when he graduated college. Because I was only an ROTC midshipman and he was a commissioned officer, a first lieutenant, I called him Sir. The Marine Corps is a funny place, the type of place where you call your friends Sir. Jack is a Southerner, raised among the Blue Ridge Mountains. In college, he minored in creative writing. He likes to talk about Faulkner and Walker Percy. He's a fan of the poet James L. Dickey. For years, Dickey worked in advertising. He wrote copy for Coca-Cola and Lay's potato chips while writing poetry after work. Later, Jack tells me something Dickey once said about writing poetry. I was selling my soul to the devil all day and trying to buy it back at night. At ARS, Jack used to string a poncho around his bunk so he could read late into the night with a headlamp. He would keep his books stacked beneath his bed, alongside his combat boots. In Afghanistan, years later, guys would call him the American Pashtun. I think he liked this. He spent so much time in Afghanistan that the Musakel around Khost would eventually grant him tribal membership. 2 decades ago, driving out the gate onto Route 60 toward Chili's or Applebee's, after days spent training in the Virginia woods, I remember the Steve Earle CD he would play. The album was 1995's Train A-Comin', and the track was Mercenary Song. It goes like this. Me and old Bill there, we both come from Georgia, met Hank out in New Mexico. We're bound for Durango to join Pancho Villa. We hear that he's paying in gold. I guess a man's got to do what he's best at. Ain't found nothing better so far. Been called mercenaries and men with no country, just soldiers in search of a war. And we're bound for the border, we're soldiers of fortune. Well, we'll fight for no country, but we'll die for good pay. Under the flag of the greenback dollar, or the peso down Mexico way. Neither one of us suspected our wars would go on for 20 years, that we would become like the professionals Steve Earle sang about. When the Taliban-led government refused to turn over Osama bin Laden after 9/11, and President Bush sent the first U.S. combat troops into Afghanistan on October 7, 2001, it took only 2 months of fighting for the Taliban to collapse. The war, as we understood it then, had proven swift. The summer Jack and I met, the U.S.-backed Islamic Republic of Afghanistan was formed. And even though bin Laden had escaped, the media was debating whether the time had come to declare victory in Afghanistan. This triumphal air soon vanished,